Hello, it's Tuesday, March 28th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing Radio, which can be found at www.wingtv.net. Before we bring our guest on today, Russell Pickering, who runs a website called Pentagon Research, we have to mention something that happened last weekend and then also a subsequent article that was published yesterday. What this deals with is the murder of a student named Michael Zabor. Now, that might not mean much to most people, but Michael Zabor was also a member of the Scholars for 9/11 Truth, and he got brutally murdered. He got shot in the head last weekend. Well, there's been a lot of speculation about what did or didn't happen, and most people were standing back and just kind of letting things fall where they may to see what the official story was. Then, yesterday, Daryl Smith, on Daryl Smith's website, Eric Hufschmidt wrote an article that is actually implicating the Scholars for 9/11 Truth in this murder.
In fact, they're pretty much accusing them of conspiracy to murder the student, which is just completely out of the realm.
Not only do we think this is repulsive, sickening, this is a desperate need or seeking of attention, but listen to some of these lines. I'm not going to give these people a lot of airtime because I'm so repulsed by them that it's unbelievable, but we felt that it needed mentioning. On page 2 of this article, Eric Hufschmidt, who writes all of these articles, by the way, he's admitted that he writes them, yet his name never appears on any of these articles, which is very bizarre in and of itself. But on page 2, he says about the murder of Michael Zabor, is there any connection to Professor Judy Wood, Professor Jim Fetzer, or the Scholars for 9/11 Truth? Then on page 5, he says, Professor Wood, Professor Fetzer, and others may have decided to risk murdering him, referring to Michael Zabor, in order to frighten other college students into remaining silent about the corruption. In the next paragraph, he asks then, who would the professors contact to do the killing? This is so far beyond the pale that Daryl Bradford Smith and Eric Hufschmidt should be absolutely ashamed of themselves for even asking those questions, because it's beyond sick
right.
to do that.
And it's based upon nothing but speculation. And I don't know why Eric Hufschmidt would want to throw away his good name and credibility as a 9/11 researcher to engage in this kind of tripe.
Exactly. Now, Russell, I apologize for cutting into your time here today, but we thought this is so egregious that somebody has to bring it out in the open. So who we have today now as our guest is Mr. Russell Pickering. He runs a site called Pentagon Research. And instead of wild speculation, here's a man that bases everything he does on science, and he tries to be as concise and precise as possible. So we'd like to welcome Mr. Russell Pickering to Wing TV. How you doing, Russell?
Welcome, Russell.
Great, you guys. Thanks. And I'll pitch in and say that is absolutely crazy, and I don't mind giving up a little time for that at all.
All right. Well, Russell, before we get started today, tell everybody how they can find this excellent, excellent website that you've created over the last year or two.
Just www.pentagonresearch.com. I'm linked off of a few other sites. Most recently, Dylan Avery linked me off of his Loose Change Second Edition site. So if you're out there and you see Pentagon Research, just click on it and give it a look.
All right, very good. Now, to start this off, last week you sent me a video, a very short video, and this can be found if you go to Russell's site, click on the link that says Exit Hole, then on the right-hand side of that page, there's a link that says Rapid Wall Breaching Kit. Click on that and you'll see what we're talking about. But what this video is, it's only a few seconds, but it's an explosion that's done on a wall. And as soon as I saw it, I emailed back to Russell and I said, that's it. That's what happened inside the Pentagon, because this corresponds with the research done by Jerry Russell and Richard Stanley, where they're saying that the holes in the inner rings of the Pentagon were created by internal explosions. So, Russell, give everybody a little bit more insight and a few more details about this short video.
Okay, yeah. I've been perplexed by the exit hole since day one. And the aircraft argument, which the first person to come out and say that's what it was Donald Rumsfeld himself, is just crazy. There's no way way that it happened.
Right.
Then the Purdue University liquefaction of the aircraft and the ball of debris swirling around through there and then being that focused to create that hole. So basically when Michael Myers, the aerospace engineer, came out, he has an article on Scholars for 911 Truth that says as soon as he saw it, and he has experience with shaped charges, he said he just got the chills and he knew exactly what it was. Well, that compelled me to look at that harder, and then Brad from Team A Plus happened to email me that little article on the wall breaching kit, rabbit wall breaching kit. As soon as I saw it, I was like, that's the hole. That's the same hole. Everything about it was the same. So I put it into a little video on my site. Then I broke it down still by still by still. Last night I added a little clip that I made out of Bob Hughes' DVD with a secondary explosion very audible in the background. And I've heard that explosion before, but I never really associated it.
Mm-hmm.
So as the pages unfolded, I can say almost definitively a mechanism very similar to what we discussed. This may not be the actual answer, but it's really darn close. It accounts for everything.
So to be clear, what we're saying then is that these holes in the inner rings are actually created by some kind of explosive charge or demolition inside the Pentagon, right?
Just like you, Victor. When I saw it, it was like that's it. All I can say, it was subjective. I'm not an explosives expert, but there's so many facts. Like the burn inside the hole is exactly what you would be expect if that fiery explosion had gone back into the building.
Uh-huh.
But came out of the building, none of it was burned. There was no fire. And many of those debris appear to be flammable, and in that rapid wall breaching kit, what comes out the front of the building, there's no even dark smoke or fire. So one side is flammable, one side is not. How the debris stacked up against the wall looks exactly how the debris from the wall they blew in the video tumble out. It's just, there's so many things to it. You always hate to commit yourself to something, but I would say we're really close to the mechanism.
I agree 100%.
Russell, the physical damage to the Pentagon is anomalous in many respects, as you've pointed out quite well on your website, and there are direct contradictions. Specifically, we have FEMA saying one thing, the FBI saying another. When it comes to this damage at the Pentagon and the plane wreckage, you show an exit hole photo that's one of the earliest you were able to locate, and it shows no aircraft parts and no fire burning. Then you have FEMA saying that most of the plane disintegrated from the intense heat of the fireball, yet the FBI, who initially said the plane vaporized, subsequently contradicted themselves and said they'd stored nearly all of it, reconstructed it, and stored it in an FBI hangar. What's going on with these contradictions, and what's the real story?
Oh, Lisa, I would give almost anything to know the real story. In fact, I mean, that's like my dream.
I mean, you got FEMA and the FBI contradicting one another. Who are we supposed to believe here?
I don't know. The one thing we do know for certain is there was never an aircraft investigation done. The FBI kicked the NTSB out against federal law, and that's the same with all four aircraft that day. There was not one official aircraft crash investigation on any of those planes. The FBI dominated everything. They took the NTSB off the scene. They confiscated the alleged black boxes. There isn't a single aspect. They took the bodies under guard to Dover Air Force Base, Delaware. There isn't a single aspect they didn't control. Now they're sitting on the videos.
Yeah.
They admitted to having them. They won't release them. The contradictions, I wish I could explain them. There's, like three different possible answers. And, I've been talking with Richard Stanley lately, and he asked me a good question. He said, I think you're real close on the exit hole, but if there was going to be a plane hitting the building, why would they do a fake pyrotechnic at the back? Why would they do both? That's a good question. So I'm looking more at his work and talking with him, and, a month from now, I could have a completely different concept. So I like you, want to know, but I still think the focus of the Pentagon has to be the release of the physical evidence, which that petition going around was for, videos and any aircraft parts.
Right. I want to just comment, too, on this one thing you have on your website where you say, when you look at exit hole chronology, You see the progressive appearance of aircraft parts when it comes to the photos. Comment on that a little bit.
Well, the one rational explanation for that is as they went into the building through the debris, they sorted that stuff out. Now, why they put it out there so blatantly for photo opportunities, I don't know. Obviously, the planting of aircraft parts inside the building would have been very easy because it's a construction zone. Northwood's Operation Northwood very clearly talked about how to spread F-104 parts around and have rescuers find them. So it's not beyond the government to plant aircraft parts.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Well, Russell, I want you to...
go ahead.
Oh, well, I want you to comment on some statements that were made a few weeks ago. We went down to Alexandria, Virginia. We covered a press conference by the Scholars for 9/11 Research, and these statements were made by Colonel George Nelson. He said that the aircraft, which were supposedly penetrating three of the Pentagon's outer rings, and they made supposedly these perfectly round holes. He said, not only is this physically impossible, but to strike on the ground floor of the Pentagon, it would have had to have made the airplane, would have had to have made contact with the Pentagon's lawn before hitting the building. Thus, there would have been more wreckage outside the building than inside of it. Yet in the initial photos of the Pentagon, we see this pristine lawn that is virtually free of wreckage. What are your thoughts?
Well, I found two photos recently. One from inside the exit hole that shows a nice polished concrete slab with no gouging or scarring, and then one taken on the 20th after they had cleared a good portion of the E-ring that, again, not only did it not have gouging or scarring, but it had little studs of rebar sticking up where if anything had slid through there. So here's where we get into the whole convoluted mess again. According to Ralph Ohmholt, who I respect very much, ground effect would keep the plane from getting down that low in the first place.
Uh-huh.
If it did get down that low, you know, how did it stay between floor one and floor two? And if those five video frames released are authentic, how is it that the lawn wasn't scorched in that intense of a fireball? So right there is three different things that are all conflicting, and you don't know which is true.
Mm.
Yeah.
But the evidence for something hitting that first floor slab and sliding through is non-existent. I mean, those little rebar studs would have been, you know, polished, or there would have been a big aluminum scrape. There would have been something.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, so that's it. I'm
wrapped up. What's your take on this remote control aircraft theory, Russell?
Like everything else, I regard it as a possibility. I have contingencies. Let's just say that they release authentic video and it's verified by a second source and there is some sort of an aircraft heading there. Okay, I don't believe it was Flight 77. Remote control aircraft, interestingly enough, on the State Department website, when they're critiquing Pentagon theories, they say Boeing aircraft are not remote controlled, which you can put in remote control Boeing and go right to 1984 and see a 720 Boeing that was remote-controlled for takeoff and landing in 1984. Remote-controlled technology goes clear back to 1959. In Operation Northwood, they're talking about drone aircraft that are going to be remotely triggered by a radio device.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, with everything else, I believe it's a possibility. The Pentagon ordered in 1996 a bunch of C-32A, which is the military version of the 757-200, that has undisclosed avionics that are very, very advanced, and so it can be accounted for. The technology is there. Whether they would go to the trouble of doing that and create a pyrotechnic exit hole, you know, if they were going to have a 757 hit the building remote, why wouldn't they just let it do what it did? Why would you have something in the back?
So, right.
Again, for me, the more I get into this, the more possibilities I consider, and I leave them all open. That's the one thing that I believe we have to do, is leave them open, consider them all, discuss them, but press for the release of the video.
Right.
Well, Russell,
and authentication of it.
Yeah. Well, Russell, there's been numerous shows done on the Pentagon in various alternative media outlets in the last 4.5 years. I'm going to ask you a question that I'm sure everybody listening to this show today would want to ask you. In your opinion, this is point blank, what did or did not strike the Pentagon on the morning of September 11th?
I hate to be evasive, but I honestly cannot say. Here's my problem. I have a very, very hard time dismissing all eyewitness reports as uncredible. There were a significant amount. Some were audio, some were visual, some were a combination. It's hard for me to say that all of those were somehow faked. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the lamp poles, the generators, things that appear to have been struck in a sequence. So part of me thinks some airborne object was headed towards the Pentagon, but the more I listen to, say, Richard or some of these other guys' work, I have to keep my mind open to that. So really, I truly allow for a remote control. I allow for everything except for Flight 77. Let's put it that way.
Okay, that's good enough.
That's basically where we stand, too. You've examined thousands of photos of the Pentagon strike and the debris and so forth. You list a number of the photographers who took these photos on your website. Many of them come from the government and the military. A number of them come from mainstream-controlled venues, and some from private citizens. You list, of the 48 photographers on your website, the bulk of the photos of those 48 are used for this research that's going on. 23 of those would have had their photos edited by the military or the government in some form, you say. And then you also say only a very small number of the photos have been uncontrolled or unedited by the government, and you list the number as 7. Talk about the trends you've seen in the photos.
The biggest trend is for the military photos. Now, I was privy to get a lot of original photos through some sources. So when you look at those in Photoshop and you go down to File Info, it will actually have like a little comment and their actual original work on the file. And you'll see that most of them have the term in big capital letters, released. So when you go and look at the file series, you'll have a bunch of photos, and then there'll be one or two or three or four missing. Okay, and my profession is photography, so I know the significance of that. That means there were photos in that series that were not released. Then you look at the average size of photos on, say, a bright day out of a particular camera. It's 1.8 megabytes. Suddenly you'll see one that's 560-some kilobytes, which indicates to me that it's been cropped or edited.
Mm-hmm.
That's one trend. The other trend is you pretty much don't see anything from the official photographers unless it's shiny with AA paint on it.
Right.
Okay. Even the pieces that are more rustic, so to speak, those were taken by more free photographers than people actually accountable to the military.
Russell.
What it boils down to is that there were 7 media or private citizens that took photos that would not have been accountable to the military, but even some of the media ones were taken, you know, from back by the media area.
Right. There's no photos of what the FBI collected, right?
There's that one photo that I imagine is FBI agents scurrying across the lawn with debris in their hands.
Uh-huh.
But as far as what they actually collected, no, I have pictures of rows and rows of them with regular paper bags going down the highway or various areas picking stuff up. But we never got to see what any of that was.
Okay. In a book that we published a few months ago called Phantom Flight 93, we have a chapter called The Evil 13, which we name names of the 13 people we feel are the biggest culprits in hands-on commandeering or executing of 9/11. Also, on your site, you have a page where you have the PNAC and you have photos of possible culprits. So what I want to ask you is, to the best of your judgment, what was happening inside the Pentagon on the morning of 9/11? Who was calling the shots? Who was making the decisions? Who was determining what hit the Pentagon, the military stand down, and whether there were internal explosions on these inner rings? What are your thoughts?
Well, again, this is speculation, and I have to generically say alleged.
Uh-huh.
One of the quotes that I call them Rumsfeldian slips. One of the quotes that Donald Rumsfeld made to, I believe it was a senator or a representative from California, sitting in his office. In fact, let me just quickly bring that quote up so I don't mess it up here. sitting in his office, or sitting in his private dining room, to U.S. Representative Christopher Cox, the Republican, California, minutes before the attack. Rumsfeld said, he said, let me tell you, I've been around the block a few times, there will be another event. And he repeated it for emphasis, Cox said, and within minutes of saying that, his words proved tragically prophetic.
Wow.
Then he immediately went out on the lawn to help people. So you'd have to ask yourself, if you're the Secretary of Defense and 285 million people are depending on you for their safety and security, and you know there's going to be another attack, how do you know there's not going to be a fifth attack or a sixth or a seventh?
Right.
Why would you go out on the lawn and risk your life and possibly the defense of a nation unless you had some sense that was the last attack?
Yeah, that's a good point. Very good point.
So as far as any evidence of who's involved, I can't say, but that to me is, you know, that's a darn good question. How the heck did he know, and why was he so emphatic about it just prior to?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I hate this interruption thing. I'm not trying to interrupt you. It's just hard to keep up with the sound
delay.
That's
okay. We've been able to view videos of other major events that occurred in Madrid and London, yet we've never been allowed to view these Pentagon videos or the videos from the CITGO, the Sheraton, or the Department of Motor Vehicles. If the government releases the information that the scholars and other researchers are calling for on the Pentagon and the other crash sites and allows a media contingent to go and examine this supposedly reconstructed plane in the FBI hangar, it would stop the conspiracy theories, perhaps, and you suggest that maybe they don't want to stop these conspiracy theories and speculation because the focus might shift onto other elements or aspects of the investigation they don't want people looking at, such as what, Russell?
Well, they have the power by today's 5 o'clock news to release the Virginia Department of Transportation cameras, the Pentagon cameras, the CITGO camera, and the Sheraton camera. And if these were authentically a 757-200 or Flight 77, they could stop that portion of it. It doesn't, like, for instance, if it was a 757, it doesn't mean it was Flight 77. So that investigation could still go on. But I think the things they don't want us to look at are, for instance, the fact that they wrote this out in 1997 and said a new Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
That means they knew something like 9/11 would facilitate their goals, which you can tell what their goals are because you can see them on the news today. Their goals were to invade Afghanistan, Iraq, to drive Syria out of Lebanon, to isolate Iran and possibly go in there, and in the meantime to impose a bunch of laws on American citizens so that someday when we get tired of it and rise up, we can be subdued.
That's right.
That's what they don't want you to know. They don't want you to know. And sometimes they hate to go into these bigger picture things because then people, you know, think you're, but it's in the, you can go to the Project for the New American Century website right now and they still have the document posted that Dick Cheney and Libby penned where they predicted a new Pearl Harbor.
Exactly.
Yep.
I mean, they're so blatant. It's on their website today. It's not something that someone said in the past that isn't traceable.
Right. They've never tried to hide it.
Everything they said in there about how they want forward military bases in Iran, they even said that even if U.S.-Iranian relations improve, we don't care. We're going ahead with this. And you go on and on. In fact, the whole new quadrilateral defense review is completely and totally 100% out of that Rebuilding America's Defenses from the Project for a New American Century website.
Yeah.
That's the stuff they don't want you to know.
Yeah. Well, Russell, in the last few months, or maybe it's extended even longer than that, you've been engaged in a debate or a discussion with Carl Schwartz about the JT-8D and the A3 Sky Warrior. Now, I know we don't have the time to go into this in depth. Give us a brief overview of where you two differ on this subject.
I think the overview can best be summarized by since that article was just published, there has not been one rational, one factual, one evidential response from anybody. That's the way I would summarize it. As far as I'm concerned, there is no debate. There was a conjecture that was allowed to trickle clear up to the top levels of 911 truth that when it was finally dealt with, apparently made it go away. I'm still waiting for an effectual response, and we'll see if it comes, but as of now, the only word I've heard in reference to it was that I was a pinhead.
Yeah, well, what, I read that. I heard that. Well, what is Carl saying that you're in opposition to, for those people that aren't familiar with this subject?
Basically, at one point or another, he came up with a theory that this engine part was to a JT-8D. He mistakenly associated it with an A3, which is never, according to any official record, had a JT-8D on it. Then he found a few photos on the internet, extrapolated that this part or this part. He never identified a part, a photo source, or anything else. Mm-hmm. And then somebody that works with him found a piece of the rusty construction trailer in the debris at the Pentagon and decided that was an entire engine, even though Jamie McIntyre stood right there with a video camera and said there was nothing bigger than 3 feet and most of everything wasn't bigger than your thumb.
Uh-huh.
So they, like I said, I put that out there. I'm not saying it wasn't an A3. I'm open to anything.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why it was, and so far there hasn't been a single response. So to me, you know, that's the best summary I can say.
Okay, very good. I want to run something else by you here. Dave McGowan, who's a 9/11 researcher, came up with a theory, this is a couple years ago actually, that Flight 77 and Flight 93 were supposed to simultaneously hit targets in Washington, D.C., one the Pentagon and the other one a very strategic target, either the White House or the Capitol building. But because of a delay in Flight 93, that the whole plan was screwed up. So Flight 77 lingered for about 40 minutes instead of going directly in to D.C. and striking the Pentagon before the World Trade Center towers were hit. And because it didn't do that, it opened up this whole can of worms with the military stand down where everyone's saying, what was the military doing all this time except sitting on the ground? What are your thoughts on that?
His work is excellent.
I agree.
Very logical, very fluent, and I've read that, and I have to say, I agree, because I can't remember the actual takeoff times, but there was like a 20-minute delay or something originally, and if those attacks were supposed to be synchronized like the attacks in New York, then one plane being thrown off course would cause the other. So, yes, I agree with that as a 100% possibility. I think another good example, to me, I can't imagine that they originally intended to implode WTC-7 at the end of the day.
Right.
Well, it must have, you know, was supposed to go down at the beginning of the day with the other buildings.
We agree.
There was some sort of, you know, malfunction. By the time they got it squared away, it really, you know, put the spotlight on it.
Yep.
Russell, we just saw a report a little while ago that where Zacharias Moussaoui has made a statement saying he was originally meant to fly a fifth plane on 9/11. What are your thoughts on this?
And before you answer, let me throw this in, too, that one of the big smoking guns, and many people have discussed this, but we have Hani Hanjour. He was called Dumb and Dumber. He could barely drive an automobile, wasn't allowed to even rent a Cessna prop plane, and he didn't have the technical expertise to do this 270-degree bank turn. So kind of put the two together, Moussaoui and Hani Hanjour.
Okay, the Moussaoui thing is clear-cut. The lead FBI, read the transcripts of the trial. The lead FBI agent publicly admitted there has never been a connection established between him and the other 19 hijackers. They picked him up with 5 or 6 days before 911. That's not enough time to finish his school and hop in a 757 and join them.
Uh-huh.
This Flight 93 was, like McGowan said, slated to hit the White House or the Capitol building or something, then what the heck is Moussaoui talking about? It was already covered. He's in a fantasy world. He is manufacturing stuff. There is no connection ever established, even though they refer to him as a 20th hijacker. He did not know the others. The others did not know him. And he had no collaboration. Now, in terms of the alleged hijacker of Flight 77, That's the other thing a lot of people don't correlate, is Barbara Olson's alleged phone call took place during that maneuver. And she's saying that she was standing at the back of the plane with the pilot standing next to her asking for advice.
Yeah.
You don't stand up during that maneuver.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Russell, I have one more question here, and I just have to say to everybody listening right now is that I think that Russell Pickering and the people that he's working with are the preeminent Pentagon researchers in the world today.
Yeah, when we talk about the hardcore 9/11 researchers, we're talking about people like Russ Pickering and Ralph Ulmholt.
Exactly.
And all of those people within the hard evidence group that have dedicated and committed themselves for years to solid scientific research, and we really respect and are proud of you, Russell.
Exactly. So before I ask you this last question, give everybody...
Can I throw one thing in there before we switch to the question?
Absolutely.
I would like to say thank you to those guys for their patience, their determination, even though we have, let's just say, festive conversations at times. Everybody hangs in there. Yep. Everybody works it out, and we all are building, and I literally wouldn't have half of what I have if it wasn't for their input and feedback. So I do appreciate that group very much.
Okay.
We do too.
And before we get to this last question, give your website address one last time, and we urge everybody to go there, and you'll find the truth about the Pentagon, or at least as close as there is right now.
It's www.pentagonresearch.com. And hopefully, you know, it's objective. It's contradictory because the evidence is contradictory.
Right.
All I ask is that people get in there and just think for yourself. And if you see some evidence, let me know. If something comes to your mind or you have evidence that, you know, you've come across, share it. It's a collaborative process.
Okay. All right. Here's the last question. Another one of the big smoking guns is, if you look at the initial Pentagon photos before the facade collapsed or the roof collapsed at 9:57 a.m., you'll see that the face of the Pentagon was basically intact with very minimal damage and negligible wreckage on the lawn. There's no possible way that a 757 could have hit that structure. So there were still a lot of prominent 9/11 researchers, and we won't name any names, but to this day they still say that Flight 77 struck the Pentagon and there's no other possibility.
Where is it?
What do you say to them?
I say this. Look, if you can trust those five DOD frames at all, let's give them the benefit of the doubt, even though they have the wrong date, even though one is altered from the source, provably so. Let's just say that if you look at frame two, it really appears to me, like Eric Bart suggests, and if you look at it, it looks like if there was an aircraft, it was significantly compromised about 200 feet from the wall. At the very bottom edge of the fireball in the rear, you can see a little chunk, and you can see other chunks. And the thing to notice about that, that's not a rebound explosion. You look at the time difference between frame one and frame two, there wasn't time for the aircraft to go to the building and the explosion to come back. You can also see the explosion is leaning forward over the building. It hasn't rounded out or equalized itself yet. So if there was an aircraft, it's never proven that there was an aircraft, I believe that it was already in structural decomposition before it ever hit the facade.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say to the people that say this was Flight 90 or Flight 77 and nothing else? If you very briefly could address that.
You know, I think they should take it and run with it and argue the evidence and give us something to look at and think about. If you're saying it for any other reason than you think it's evidential, then ask yourself why you're saying it. Or, you know, is the truth too difficult? You know, you talk to a lot of people at the coffee shop now. Since, you know, Charlie Sheen was talking, people ask me now, so what about that? You know, they've ignored me for a year. Now they want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Some are just flat out afraid to consider the alternative.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, Russell,
I can't blame them for that. I mean,
no.
that undermines the sense of security for them. That's reasonable. And given some time and a proper approach, I think they'll start to think, but you got to get past that initial closed mind or fear.
That's
right.
Exactly right. Well, Russell, you keep up the great work there. It's PentagonResearch.com. We think the world of what you and Ralph Ulmholt and the rest are doing. So keep up the great work. And
we're keeping an eye on what you guys are doing.
That's right. If anything new comes up, by all means, let us know.
I always will. And thank you very much for having me on again, you guys.
Thank you.
Take care. We'll be back tomorrow again on Wing TV. Until then, keep your eyes open because there's a lot going on.
See you all then.